Greetings, warriors, veterans, and American-leading citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-wah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness about our woke military. Then we'll learn about the Warrior Music Foundation. And of course, we'll conclude with military history and our self-defense report. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Elaine Donnelly. She's a strong advocate for a military that is ready to fight and win battles. And we really need that focus. We've needed it for some time, but especially now. Welcome, Elaine. Thanks for joining us.
All right. Thank you for inviting me. It's been a while.
It has. Elaine, tell us when, how, and why you founded the Center for Military Readiness.
Well, we are celebrating our 30th anniversary. Time goes fast. Back in the Clinton administration, he was the first to call for gays in the military. And I realized that after my term on the Presidential Commission on the Assignment of Women in the Armed Forces was done in 1992, there was no organization following these issues full time. So I founded the Center for Military Readiness. We cover a wide range of issues, all branches of the service. We never run out of things to talk about, and things are really busy now with the Biden administration, because what used to be called politically correct policies have advanced and become even more extreme, and now we call them woke policies. And we define wokeism or woke policies as those that impose progressive ideology and take them to extremes with enforced compliance, even if it hurts the institution. So a number of woke issues have to do with sexuality and the like, but even issues like climate change or things that the Pentagon is pursuing, even if it harms national defense, all of those issues fall under the woke military. So this year, for our 30th anniversary, we issued a challenge to Congress for 2023 to take on wokeism in the military. And we gave them a brief rundown of at least 10 issues that need to be addressed. In fact, many of them already are. And I was very pleased with the response. I think members of Congress, the Senate and the House, the new House, are quite ready and willing to take on these issues. They realize that social issues do have an impact on military readiness. It's not just about the hardware and how many tanks and planes you have. It's about the people and how well trained are the people in the military. What do you do about recruiting? The recruiting crisis last year is one that caught everyone's attention. And we see a lot of opportunity in the coming year to see some results in the new Congress.
Well, we really need to. Regular listeners have heard me say many times before, the sole purpose for our military is to kill people and break things. And if we're really good at it, the bad guys won't mess with us. That's called keeping us safe or deterrence. And this is a theme that you and I have always totally agreed on.
Yes.
And being politically correct or being diverse or whatever doesn't contribute to that. We need to be focused on getting the job. Militaries are expensive. We don't need an expensive something that won't do the deterrence that we need. So
right.
I really, really appreciate you, Elaine.
Well, and thank you. Let's start with that question about diversity. Diversity is a good thing. Everyone likes to be in a group that has a variety of different kinds of people that are involved and working together. But the problem with today's so-called diversity is the woke aspect of it. It's being taken to extremes, and it has a cousin, critical race theory, which it divides people up in groups into oppressors and people who are oppressed. If you are a white person, according to critical race theory teachings, you are accused of white supremacy or sympathy with white supremacy. You must be anti-racist. It's not enough to be not racist. And people who are not of the white race are considered victims. It is so divisive, especially in the military, because a diverse group of people in the military, historically and traditionally, ever since the Truman Executive Order, people must work together, depend on each other, trust each other. If you introduce elements of suspicion and accusations that you can't refute in any way, if your skin is a certain color, that is the worst of divisive and has nothing to do with meritocracy, with non-discrimination, which of course we support and favor. It's a whole new concept, and it's really causing a lot of problems right now.
It is indeed. I served on active duty in the Vietnam era, from the 60s through the 80s. I served 22 years. I served two tours in combat in Vietnam. My units, my platoon, my company were diverse in race and whatever. And we were a team. We were very effective because we were a team. We were, first of all, part of the team. And it worked. But I can't even believe what I'm hearing now, because that doesn't seem to be the focus anymore, does it?
No, it's the opposite. And this administration is thoroughly involved in CRT, critical race theory. The service academies are very much involved in this. And one part of it that's really disturbing is that the Pentagon leaders deny it. They keep saying, oh, no, we're not doing that. Even though in the Navy, they have a reading list that includes authors, primary sources of critical race theory teachings and ideology. They're on the reading list, but you don't read about people like Thomas Sowell being on the list, or Shelby Steele, or people who favor meritocracy, not diversity for diversity's sake, or percentage-based demographics. It's a very loaded situation, and it's disturbing to see how many military leaders keep denying it. Judicial Watch filed a Freedom of Information request and received a trove of critical race theory teachings from West Point alone. So we know it exists. And members of Congress, the good news is there's more than a few members of Congress who are once again going to offer legislation to do something about this, to stop the excesses of critical race theory teachings, and also something about the diversity quotas. Again, diversity quotas are different than meritocracy and non-discrimination. So these are two related issues that are on our to-do list for the Congress. Another related one is the anti-extremism sessions and training coordinated by the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin. They took place around the world, and they were a full day of just concentrating on critical race theory and people being accused of being anti-minority, being extremist in their own views. And it was really quite divisive. And this was right out of the box in the Biden administration. So that's another issue. We've also worked on the issues like draft our daughters. Last year, there was legislation to draft our daughters, to have them involved in registration for selective service. Fortunately, that was taken out under pressure from a lot of people for the second or third time, and we hope it doesn't come back. We work on women in land combat. There's a big issue in the Army, Army combat fitness test controversies. This has been going on for more than 3 years. They promised when they said women could go in the infantry that the standards would be the same for men and women, sex-neutral standards, in other words. Well, guess what? They had a new combat fitness test. Didn't work out because the women were failing in very high rates. They were being injured. They kept making adjustments and tweaks to the test. Finally, they gave in and they said, well, we're going to have sex normed or different standards for men and women. Now, you can have sex norm standards for basic training, pre-commissioning at the academies, things like that, entry level, but not in the combat arms, not in infantry, not in special operations forces. Senator Tom Cotton took on the first Secretary of the Army, female Secretary of the Army, Christine Wormuth, and he said, this will get people killed. Now, he promised to do something about it last year. We were very pleased. He got an amendment into the defense bill together with Mike Waltz on the House side, and it looked very good, very solid. The Army was going to have to explain what's going on with the ACFT, but they watered it down in the negotiation between the House and Senate. So Senator Cotton tells me he's going to continue on watching this issue very closely. And you can't have sex normed or different standards for men and women going into the infantry. You just can't have it.
Well, you know, you just suggested something sort of radical, that there's actually a difference between men and women.
Well,
wow.
According to the Pentagon.
Well, there's more to discuss about our woke military, and Elaine is going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time to run hard for a couple of miles. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. Elaine and I will be right back.
$30 trillion in debt, 20 years of endless war, and veterans not able to get the care they deserve. These are some of the issues concerned Veterans for America is confronting head on. At CVA, we aim to amplify the veteran perspective to create a better future for all Americans. but we need your help. Join CVA in shaping a better tomorrow for you, your family, and your community. Visit cv4a.org to learn more and join the movement. That's cv4a.org.
Troops, if you ever have to defend yourself or your family with your firearm, you'll need legal representation. That's why I'm a member of U.S. Law Shield. They provide the best self-defense insurance that I've found. They recommend that you not even talk to the police without an attorney present. They provide unlimited attorney coverage as needed at a very reasonable rate. Check uslawshield.com, uslawshield.com, and use the code FRONTLINES. That's one word, FRONTLINES. You'll be glad you did. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness on the topic of our woke military. Elaine, we were talking about the radical idea that there's a difference between men and women. I mean, because all pro football teams and pro hockey teams all have men and women playing, right?
That's correct. But you know what? The Pentagon is trying to deny that difference and also make the claim and build whole policies on the claim that a man can transform into a woman and a woman into a man. The transgender policy, which was put in place by Barack Obama back in 2016, was eliminated by, not totally eliminated, by President Trump. President Trump came up with a new policy. It was nuanced. And it was on its way to being upheld as constitutional. But then Joe Biden won the election, and here comes the Obama policy back again. But guess what? We just found out just recently that just before Christmas, the Biden administration made some administrative changes in the transgender policy, taking it much further than where it was under Barack Obama. Now, we're going to be issuing a policy analysis on this very detailed to you can see the comparison between the two types of policies, Biden's being more radical than the original. But what we're going to see, I think, unless Congress acts to do something about this, we're going to see people cross-dressing on military bases, not just away from the base, but on base, on duty. The new policy authorizes that. We're going to see the ROTC and military service academies involved, which has not been the case before. We're going to see things like, well, of course, all of the coercion for people of faith and chaplains to go along with the fiction that if a man says he's a woman, that means he's a woman, and vice versa. They're going to have to go along with that with absolutely no option to dissent. We're going to see this option to allow for cross-dressing. We've been talking a lot about the issue of drag queen story hours and drag queen performances on military bases. If people can, well, dress differently than their what is called their sex assigned at birth, which is ridiculous. Who does the assigning? They don't explain that. If this goes ahead, then I think we're going to see a lot of people wondering what happened, what is going on in our military, and why is our people being forced to say and believe something that they know is simply not true. So there's also some restrictions on the collection and disclosure of data on what are called, and this is a quote, incidents of harmful behaviors involving sexual orientation and transgender persons, even for legislative purposes. This is, again, taking what was there under Barack Obama to even greater extremes. They're also admitting that sometimes transition procedures don't work. So the new policy authorizes detransition policies for people who change their mind. A man becomes a woman, then he says, no, I want to be a man again. So the DOD is going to have to cover all of that at unknown expense, huge expense. And the activists want to extend that to children of military people and also veterans. Veterans are looking for hormone treatments paid for by the government for life. So all of this went on under the radar just before Christmas. And we have a policy analysis putting the spotlight on it because Congress is going to have to take a close look at it.
Well, they sure better. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Elaine Donnelly about our woke military. Elaine, when I married my wonderful wife, I had just come back from my first tour in Vietnam. I'd been in the Army about 2 years. She was a PE major in college, was teaching PE in high school. She was incredibly good shape physically. She couldn't have stood up against me in combat. If we'd had a fist fight, I would have won. That's true for virtually every woman I've ever met. Yet in close combat, hand-to-hand combat, which is what we're talking about, they're saying now, women are supposed to be just fine at doing that. And we're talking about putting a couple of 20-year-olds in a foxhole together and say, you know, stay alert. One of you stay alert 24/7 and keep us all safe. And one's a guy and one's a gal. This is a recipe for disaster.
What the military should do, we want and need women in our military. Okay, that's not going to change.
Absolutely.
But policies need to encourage discipline, not indiscipline. And the way it's set up now, anything that is determined to be a career issue, we can't have barriers to careers. We have diversity quotas, which are called metrics. It doesn't fool anybody. When you say you have to have a certain percentage of people in each different category of military service, what you're doing is saying we're going to take people only because of their skin color or their sex, rather than choose the best and put the best people in the right places. This is a radical concept. It's incremental. The incrementalism has been progressing, especially since Obama. It started under Bill Clinton, but it was nowhere near as radical back then as what we're seeing now and what we're about to see, unless Congress intervenes. But again, I think there's a pretty good hope that, and another thing Congress is looking at, parents' rights in the military, the largest school system in the world, the DOD Education Activity Schools, 69,000 some students, they are being run by these same advocates of DEI and CRT and LGBT, you name it, BLM. There's a woman named Calissa Wing. She's in charge of DEI in all of the Department of Defense schools. This woman has very radical concepts. She's very disparaging in her remarks about white people as she sees it. This is just not acceptable. Two members of Congress, senior members, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee and the chairman of the Personnel Subcommittee, Jim Banks and Mike Rogers, they just wrote a letter just on January 30 the other day protesting this particular appointee and everything that she stands for, and they're demanding information about what she is doing with the Department of Defense students in those schools. And the reason this is a national security matter, it goes beyond even parents' rights. This is a group of young people who, when they grow up, reach 18 or whatever, they are more likely to consider military service because of their parents.
Yes.
But if they're taught in school, they get critical race theory lessons, and they learn that the United States is an evil country, a racist country. When they start to question their own parents' military service, now that is a recipe for dissension, for losing good people. It doesn't take much. Parents, if they have another reason to leave the military, will leave the military. We don't need this.
Why would you want to defend with your life a country that's evil?
Right. So last session, Elise Stefanik had parents' rights legislation. She got it passed on the House side with bipartisan support handily. On the Senate side, Marsha Blackburn tried. Hers failed on a tie vote in the Senate Armed Services Committee, although all the Republicans supported her. So both of them, I believe, will come back with parents' rights legislation so that military folks who can't run for school board and do things like civilian parents can do, that they have some way to oversee the education that their own kids are receiving in the Department of Defense schools.
That's amazing. That's incredibly important. Elaine, yeah. We're almost out of time. What's a call to action? What can citizens do? Contact Congress critters and our senators?
Well, the first thing you can do is go to our webpage, because you'll see there the information on all the issues we just touched upon. The lead article is called Challenge for Congress for 2023, Wokeism in the Military. And there's links inside the lead article at the top of the website. It's at cmrlink.org. And you can pick out whatever issue you want. You know, I found when I went to see members of the House and Senate staffers, we have a one-page summary of this, just bullets. And they looked at all the bullets. And they said, yeah, I can work on this one, or I can work on that one. So pick out whichever bullet you like, whichever issue concerns you the most, or several of them, and just call the Congress or call the members on that Armed Services Committee, both of them, and say, you know, we really want you to do something about this. And chances are they will. So it's a very important thing to do. And the roadmap is there. And I can tell you the members of Congress are ready and willing to do something.
Amen. And it's our role. It's our country. We have to contact our Congress critters. We have to take some action. We can't sit back and wait till it happens. Elaine, one more time. What's your website?
cmrlink.org. cmrlink.org. And take a look at that lead article, and you'll find all kinds of articles on a lot of different issues. Just go to the directory there, whatever issue you're interested in. Chances are we've written about it more than once because we've been in existence now. This is our 30th anniversary year. So help us celebrate our anniversary. Send a contribution. It's tax deductible. And we need the support of grassroots people who care about what's going on.
Yes, indeed. I strongly support Elaine and CMR. Elaine, thank you. Thanks for taking time to join us today. Thank you for your service to our nation's military by keeping up the fight. I appreciate you.
Thank you for your service. We appreciate it.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss the Warrior Music Foundation. They will open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troop, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm, then take a break and stay in the area. I'll be right back.
HelpVet.net was created to be the nation's number one resource center for all veterans, active military, and families. At HelpVet.net, you'll find up-to-date information on benefits available through the VA, resources on education, employment, health and wellness, and more. Find hundreds of nationally recognized organizations offering discounts on products and services, as well as local organizations from attorneys to yoga studios. You'll find them at HelpVet.net. Visit HelpVet.net for all your family's needs.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your questions and comments. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. It's a pleasure to welcome to the show veteran Mike Carmona. He's the founder and president of the Warrior Music Foundation. Welcome aboard, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Colonel. I appreciate it.
Mike, tell us about your time in the service. When and why did you join? What did you do?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I enlisted in the world's finest nuclear-powered Navy in 1995 as an intelligence specialist. I enlisted after college, and then I got commissioned shortly thereafter, served total from 95 to 2005, finished up as an intelligence officer, made a couple deployments, did some really, really exciting things, you know, had really kind of a diverse background while I was in the service. And I, you know, I think I joined for a lot of the reasons that most people do, you know, just was, I felt like it was part of my life that was missing and, you know, needed to have that, you know, that kind of higher serving, definitely an opportunity to, you know, to get some financial support for grad school and those type of things. And so it was just meant to be, and I enjoyed every minute of it for 10 years.
Hey, if you served for 10 years, you obviously were out there doing your thing and supporting our nation. That's cool. As I read it on your website, your mission is to serve our active duty military personnel and veterans and their families by providing a venue for learning, healing, and camaraderie using music. Goes on to say, your goal is to improve mental health in the military community one person at a time, and to proudly offer your services to law enforcement and first responders who serve our communities who need our support. We offer free music therapy and music lessons in Maryland and Pennsylvania. That's how I read that. I guess I got it right. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. I think we've expanded over time, and we have a pretty robust online presence. And so we've opened our services really kind of without borders. So it's not just local to Maryland and Pennsylvania, but we've got veterans in active duty from all around the world that are taking advantage of it. But that's exactly it. I mean, it's a nonprofit to support military community and their families. It's all about mental health and, you know, improving and reducing the impact of PTSD and depression. You know, really, it's about eliminating suicide. We all know that mental health and PTSD is still a significant problem in the military. And you just need every tool and resource that you possibly can to address the problem. And we found that music had a lot of unique capabilities that could really help make progress. And so I pulled a team together to help me launch this nonprofit in 2017. And we just feel like music is the tool that we use to get at some of these really hard problems. And it's been wildly successful.
That makes real sense. I'm very unmusical, but I appreciate music. I enjoy it. And I can see how it can touch you in all kinds of different ways, because it touches me in all kinds of different ways. And I'm guessing that this is something that came from some musical talent within you. I presume you have got some musical talent and have used it throughout your life.
I do, but really it doesn't matter, Denny, if you're a musician. It's not, it's about partnering with other people who can just use that as a tool, right? So music therapy has been around for a long time. In fact, it really got its start in kind of post-World War II, like during World War II, through the Army. And so it is just a tool that therapists use. And sometimes it means that the veteran is playing music. Sometimes it's listening. Sometimes it's writing. And, you know, there's a lot of really special, tangible things that happen when you use music. But yeah, sure, I have a music background. But actually, when I was a teenager, I was in a car accident. And as part of my kind of rehab, my rehab team kind of introduced music therapy as part of the process. And I just became really fascinated by it. And so it was always in the back of my mind. And then when I got into the military, and when I actually transitioned out of active duty, I was still really active in the DOD. And I had lost some really close friends to suicide. And I just decided we had to do something. We had to do something really tangible. We had to really try to solve this problem. And I realized that, you know, let's give this music aspect a shot and see if there's something we could do. And I found a music therapy practice that were all kind of board certified therapists to help me kind of put the program together. And so it's a combination of playing, listening, writing, interacting, and just experiencing a lot of different music techniques that just help people recover.
You know, that's logical. This is Colonel Denny Gilliam on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Mike Carmona about the Warrior Music Foundation. I have zero music talent, as you and I have discussed, but I certainly enjoy listening to music. And while nobody likes to hear me, I like to sing. And why do I do it? Because it makes me feel good. And your music therapy and lessons, which you do some face-to-face, but now online, sort of does that work? If I felt like I needed to plug in and I'm in Michigan and you're not, what would I find myself doing?
Yeah, so exactly. So everybody that participates, and we have two main programs. We have music therapy, and again, it's a formal therapy process that's administered by therapists, but not every veteran will take advantage of therapy. It might take some time to build up to that. So at the same time, we just offer free music lessons, and those music lessons are provided by world-class music teachers. But the curriculum, the music lesson curriculum, has been developed with our music therapists. So we know at a minimum, just kind of going through that lesson program, we've built a program that'll kind of help you rehabilitate along that process. And then if you feel like you need to make that transition over to therapy, we're there to support you. So how do you get there? You go to our website, warriormusicfoundation.org, and there's a quick application process. And we need to know a little bit about you, your military service, you know, what you're trying to get from the program. And we'll do a quick assessment. Everybody that joins the program will get an assessment by somebody from our team. And that just helps us decide, you know, whether you want or need lessons and what skill set you have, or if you need therapy and, you know, what that looks like. If you're local to one of our actual studios where we give therapy and lessons, then we'll get you signed up there. And if not, we have a whole team of people who are, you know, musicians that are spread across the country that we can connect you with, and you can do the, you know, we do the lessons and the sessions over Zoom. And so it just makes it work perfectly.
That sounds awesome. And I appreciate the fact that you include law enforcement and other first responders, because I'm fond of saying they're not our brothers in arms, but they're our first cousins in valor, because they put their lives on the line every day.
And there's a big percentage of law enforcement and first responders who are veterans. And, you know, I come from a military family and a police family, and we experience a lot of the same things. And anyway, just one last thing, you know, we don't talk a lot about it, but this program is available for dependents as well, you know, spouses and kids. And there aren't a lot of programs for dependents, you know, and we found that while mom or dad are dealing with whatever problems they have coming out of their deployments, you know, sometimes the kids and the spouses are left really without a support network. Well, and they're going through some pain themselves. And so we want to make sure that we're helping them at the same time.
Amen, brother. They also serve, who also sit at home and wait. That's right. Not agree more. Mike, this is awesome. You've given some of this information before, but you're a nonprofit, so I'll bet you would not be offended if people wanted to support you financially. How can listeners get in touch with you, support you, or get involved? Tell us again how to do that.
It is really important. You know, we need that. There's a wait list, Danny, of 300 people that need help, and it just comes down to making sure that we have the resources to support everybody. And so if you go to our website, again, it's warriormusicfoundation.org. You can see a way to sign up to volunteer, but you can also donate financially if you have the means. And it takes a community. We want people who are willing to help us with their time or their resources or their connections. Frankly, all three is even better, right? But we are solely funded by personal donations. And, you know, we have some corporate sponsors, but, you know, we're a small, scrappy startup company. And we rely on friends and family and people who really care about our veterans to help. So log on and take a look at what we do. And if you feel so inclined, you know, we'd love to get your support.
That's awesome. Mike, thank you. Thank you for your service to our nation while you're in uniform, but thank you especially for what you're doing now. I could not support you more. God bless you, brother. We have to stay in touch.
Yeah, thank you, sir. And thanks for what you're doing. You know, you got to shine a light on all these different resources because you never know what's going to connect with somebody. And you got to make sure that you're highlighting what opportunities are out there because people need support.
Yes, sir. Groups, if you're a veteran who's having trouble getting your disability approved by the VA, contact Barry Law. Reach them at ptsdlawyers.com. That's ptsdlawyers.com. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. Groups, you've reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 60 this time? And once your ranger ready, then stand at ease.
Fresh, flash, frozen from the American farmer every time. PatriotFoods.com. Hit the shop now button. You're supporting a veteran family in need every time you shop. Look at us online, see how we give back. For the servicemen and women of this great country, we are fighting for the American farmer. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM, 10% off today, folks. Shop now.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. I buy Patriot Foods. It's great. PatriotFoods.com, promo code FREEDOM.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights, as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. And team, it is mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Mark, a member of the Marine Reserves, really appreciated the Colonel's comments on why we've been losing wars. He hopes we'll learn how to do it right.
I totally agree, Mark. I hope someone in the Pentagon has reached the same conclusions.
And Mary has a son at one of the military academies, and she hopes that STARS is successful, because it sure is needed.
Thank you, Mary. Let's hope common sense will prevail here. And now it's time for military history. Take us there, Skip. What's first?
Well, Colonel, on 6 February 1778, during our War for Independence, representatives from the U.S. and France signed the Treaty of Amity and Commerce and the Treaty of Alliance in Paris. The treaties recognized the U.S. as an independent nation and encouraged trade between France and us and provided for a military alliance against Great Britain, stipulating that the absolute independence of the U.S. be recognized as a condition for peace and that France would be permitted to conquer the British West Indies. The eagerness of the French to help us was motivated both by an appreciation of our revolutionaries' democratic ideals and by bitterness at having lost most of their American empire to the British at the end of the French and Indian Wars in 1763.
And on 6 February 1862, during the Civil War, General Ulysses Grant provided the first major Union victory of the war when he captured Fort Henry on the Tennessee River. 10 days later, he captured Fort Donelson on the Cumberland River, which gave the Yankees control of northern Tennessee and paved the way for the occupation of Nashville.
And 2 days later, on 8 February 1862, Union General Ambrose Burnside scored the second major victory when he captured Roanoke Island in North Carolina. The victory gave the Yankees control of the mouth of Albemarle Sound, a key Confederate bay that allowed the Union to threaten the rebel capital of Richmond from the south. The Yankees suffered 37 men killed and 214 wounded, while the Confederates lost 23 men killed and 62 wounded before they surrendered. The Union now controlled a vital section of the coast. For the first time in the war, the North had reason for optimism.
I'm guessing the Yankees were cheering, and it wasn't a baseball team they're cheering for.
That's right.
And on 10 February 1942, during World War II, a Japanese submarine launched a brutal attack on Midway, a coral atoll that was used as a U.S. Navy base. It was the fourth bombing of the atoll by a Japanese ship since December 7th. The capture of Midway was an important part of the broader Japanese strategy of trying to create a defensive line that would stretch from the western Aleutian Islands in the north to the Midway, Wake, and Marshall and Gilbert Islands in the south, and then west of the Dutch West Indies. Occupying Midway would also mean depriving us of a submarine base and would provide the perfect launch pad for an all-out assault on Hawaii. Admiral Yamamoto, mastermind of the Pearl Harbor attack and commander-in-chief of the Japanese Combined Fleet, knew that only the utter destruction of our naval capacity would ensure Japanese free reign in the Pacific. Japanese bombing of the atoll by the ship and submarine failed to break through the extraordinary defense put up by Admiral Chester Nimitz, the commander of our Navy in the Pacific, who used every resource available to protect Midway and, by extension, Hawaii. Yamamoto persevered with an elaborate warship operation launched in June, but the Battle of Midway was a disaster for Japan and was the turning point for an ultimate American victory in the Pacific.
Colonel, I love that movie, Midway. In fact, you know, you've motivated me. I'm going to watch that movie today. Thanks, Colonel. I was too busy already.
Hey, good. Give you one more thing to do. But that was the turning point in the Pacific. And if you know anything about World War II, you need to know that.
Absolutely. And on 8 February 1943, during World War II, Japanese troops evacuated Guadalcanal, leaving the island in Allied possession after a long campaign. Our victory paved the way for other Allied wins in the Solomon Islands. The Japanese invaded the Solomons in 1942 and began building a strategic airfield on Guadalcanal. On 7 August of that year, U.S. Marines landed on the island, signaling the Allies' first major offensive against Japanese-held positions in the Pacific. The Japanese responded quickly with sea and air attacks. A series of bloody battles ensued in the debilitating tropical heat as Marines sparred with Japanese troops on land, while in the water surrounding Guadalcanal. The U.S. Navy fought 6 major engagements with the Japanese between August 24 and November 30. Both sides suffered heavy losses of men, warships, and planes in the battle for Guadalcanal. An estimated 1,600 U.S. troops were killed, over 4,000 were wounded, and several thousand more died from disease. The Japanese lost 24,000 soldiers. On 31 December 1942, Emperor Hirohito told the Japanese troops they could withdraw from the area. We secured Guadalcanal about 5 weeks later. You know, Colonel, I think probably if the Battle of Midway hadn't happened, that would have been, what, 4 more aircraft carriers that Japan could have thrown into that fight, and we might have lost that one as well.
Good point. I never thought about it from that perspective. I agree with you. And on 7 February 1965, during the Vietnam War, as a part of Operation Flaming Dart, 49 U.S. Navy airplanes dropped bombs and rockets on the barracks and staging areas of Dong Ha, a guerrilla training camp in North Vietnam. Escorted by U.S. jets, a follow-up raid by South Vietnamese planes bombed North Vietnamese Military Communications Center. These strikes were in retaliation for a communist attacks on the U.S. installation at Camp Holloway and the adjacent Pleiku Airfield in the Central Highlands, which killed 8 U.S. servicemen, wounded 109, and destroyed or damaged 20 aircraft. The retaliatory raids did not have the desired effect. On February 10th, the Viet Cong struck again, and this time in an American installation in Quy Nhon, killing 23 Americans. Johnson quickly ordered another retaliatory strike, Flaming Dart 2. You know, I don't understand this retaliatory thing. If you kill me, I'll kill you. That's what war is about.
That's right. I want to be a little more preemptive than that, I think.
Yeah.
And on 9 February 1965, a U.S. Marine Corps Hawk Air Defense Missile Battalion was deployed to Da Nang, Vietnam. President Johnson had ordered this deployment to provide protection for the key U.S. airbase there. This was the first commitment of American combat troops in South Vietnam, and there was considerable reaction around the world to the new stage of U.S. involvement in the war. Predictably, both Communist China and the Soviet Union threatened to intervene if the U.S. continued to apply its military might on behalf of the South Vietnamese. Britain and Australia supported the U.S. action, but France called for negotiations.
Yeah. And that's military history for today. And now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom want our listeners to get trained and get armed in that order. We fully support the right to keep and bear arms for all law-abiding families, and we encourage you to find out about the laws governing use of deadly force in your state and follow them to the letter. And, of course, don't forget to follow the rules of safety and common sense whenever you're carrying a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
It was early evening, just as the sun was going down, as Eileen left the grocery store pushing her fully loaded shopping cart in front of her. She didn't see the man hiding behind the van until he was on top of her. She was viciously punched in the face with brass knuckles, breaking bones and leaving cuts and bruises about her head and her shoulders. As she fell to the ground, Eileen remembered the pepper spray on her key ring and brought it up in front of her. She sprayed the criminal in the face. He immediately covered his face with his hands, let out a scream, and fled the parking lot. Eileen called the police and was treated for her injuries. The assailant hasn't been located.
Thanks, Colonel. Eileen did a great job here protecting herself against a deadly attack. Oleoresin capsicum sprays, commonly called pepper spray or OC spray, are widely used in our society as a personal protection tool and for good reason, as they have many advantages. First, they are easy to deploy against an attacker. Simply grasp the container with the spout facing away from you and press the button. The place to aim is the center of face, right about the bridge of the nose on most people. Second, OC spray is effective on approximately 80% of the general population. OC spray is made from chili peppers. It's effective because it causes the mucous membranes to swell, which makes it hard to breathe. It also swells the veins in the eyes, which impairs vision. I remember the gas chamber in boot camp where we were forced to take off our gas mask in a fog-filled Quonset hut. Many of us were immediately incapacitated. Mucus drained from my nose and mouth, and I cried like a baby. Some recruits even vomited. The burning sensation on the skin lasted for at least an hour, and it couldn't be easily washed off. Third, OC spray is legal to carry in more jurisdictions than firearms. While guns are more effective, you can't carry them everywhere. And let's face it, there are those among us who refuse to carry a gun for moral and personal reasons. But pepper spray gives these people a fighting chance to save their lives. Fourth, because OC spray is a less than lethal application, you don't have to struggle with the morality of using deadly force. If you get excited and make a bad legal call, then you may still be in a little bit of trouble, but at least no one died, and you won't be spending the rest of your life in prison. Here's my advice to those of you who refuse to carry a gun or who are unable to carry one. Get the pepper spray and carry it every day. Because it's not a gun, you can carry it easily in your pocket or even in your hand while walking through a dangerous parking lot. No one will ever know that you have it. Pepper spray is a part of my own personal protection plan, and I carry it with me every place I go, simply because 85% of altercations do not rise to the level of deadly force. But you should also be aware that it doesn't work as well on people on drugs, the mentally ill, or those filled with rage. It's also only effective at close range and is affected by the wind. One last thing, be sure to research the OC laws in your jurisdiction as they vary from state to state. Eileen did a great job protecting herself from a deadly attack, and Frontlines of Freedom wishes her all the best as she recovers.
Yes, sir. Our movie of the month is The Silent Child. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. We'll review it at the end of the month, and I'd appreciate getting your comments about it. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, the former Director of National Intelligence, Rick Grinnell, will discuss our nation's challenges. Veteran Steve Burkhalter from Concerned Veterans for America will share his insights. And we'll talk with Air Force vet Amanda Winters about her time in the military and what she's doing now. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. You can purchase this book at frontlinesoffreedom.com. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information you will not get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.